À, tá chân lắm.
I was seeing some people, that's why I got late. So we won't, so even if I try to read through a little bit, I won't be able to finish much. So anyway, let's try to go through Dashamal Limbrim a little bit. We are on the Tibetan book, which we are on this heading, on this topic of thinking on the qualities of the three jewels. Understanding the individual qualities of the three jewels. So these are different. This section is on, like, after if one goes into refuge in the three jewels, what are the commitments regarding what has to be practiced and implemented, and what has to be refrained from. So that's so that's from the text, collected topics, the text, this Lamrim, Shyamal Lamrim, is quoting from the treatise Duwa, and also from another text called Menga, and it's now explaining on the how to put into practice, or rather, what to do as commitment after having taken refuge in the three jewels. So in the first, according to the Duwa treatise, the treatise called Duwa, or rather the collected or the collected text or collected topics. After having taken refuge in the Buddha, as a teacher, refuge, one's commitment. The first commitment is one should rely on one's teacher faithfully and in proper. Keep proper relation with one's teacher. That's the first commitment after having taken refuge in the Buddha. And also, one should aspire to attain liberation, and also engage in the practice of the path, as far they were explained in the sutras, and also. Study on them, And also find the company of the Sangha. Keep the Sangha, or rather, make the Sangha as your companion in the spiritual path. Another set of commitments. Another set of commitments is one should stay away from objects that lead to the arisal of the afflictive emotion, in other words, distraction. One should refrain or stay away from destructive objects and destructive and company. And try as much as one can to implement the rules laid out by the Buddha, and also have sort of implement compassion, or rather practice compassion as much as possible to sentient beings, and avoid acts of harming others. And during daytime and nighttime, engage in acts of making offerings to the three jewels. Out of these four, the first three, the text says, are like practices to commitments of taking the Sangha, taking the Dharma as one's object of refuge, and the fourth one, which is making offerings to the Buddha, the three jewels, day and night. That's a commitment, a common commitment for taking refuge in all three jewels. And so the text goes on. So, can I pee the inch? Call us.
Gamdu kele na sonam gachim busaya than yendrol and midonwada. Gamdu penu sonam gachim busabadua.
The son gachim busabadua.
The bottom jacky tenchabadua.
So as a result, the text talks about the benefits of such benefits of taking refuge in the three jewels, like one would be able to accumulate huge amount of vast merits as a result of taking refuge in the three jewels, and also one would every moment reducing one's huge amount of negative karma that one has would be every moment decreasing like that. So these are the different benefits. Also, one would be other benefits are like one would become a Buddhist as a result of taking one one becomes a Buddhist as a result of taking refuge in the three jewels. Due to the power of having power of the object of the refuge, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and having taken refuge in them, one would henceforth be guarded from both human and non-human harmful beings trying to harm you. So these are just some of the gist, the main points this this section of this Lamrim is talking about. The text says, if one thinks carefully in detail on these benefits, actually the text enumerates a great number of other benefits. So as a result of thinking this, if one realize how much benefit is there in taking this refuge practice seriously and taking refuge in the three jewels, one would realize that feel great enthusiasm and great joy and delight, and in taking refuge in the three jewels and the benefit one is obtaining from that, and as a result of that, one would not for a moment give rise to a thought that wishes to take refuge in an object that is other than the three jewels. Next heading is training in the mind aspiring to with this we have finished the section training in the mind aspiring to attaining one's good rebirth in future life and the benefit of that path. So we will stop here because I have to. Now, so I have later on some other programs, and then I have to go up to Daepung. So His Holiness wants to recite a little bit from the Liberation in the Palm of Your Hand now. His Holiness starts from day 11's teaching, which is on page 322. Gyabji Pawanga Rinpoche told us we should adjust our motives. The Great Play Sutra says the three realms are as impermanent as autumn clouds. Beings die and are born. It is well watching a play. It is like watching a play. Beings' lives run like lightning flashes in the sky or rush on like high mountain waterfalls. In other words, the three realms, the earth, Mount Meru, and all are like autumn clouds. Beings are born and die. It is like watching a play, for the characters can change from moment to moment to moment. Our lives do not last long. They are mere flashes of lightning. They undergo succession from moment to moment, are not stationary, and rush by like high mountain waterfalls. You should therefore think, I will practice Dhamma immediately. The Lamrim is the best gateway to that one path, followed by all the Buddhas of the path three times. You should therefore attend this discourse on the Lamrim so as to achieve Buddhahood for the sake of all sentient beings. Then you must put it into practice. He then restated the headings already covered and reviewed yesterday's material on impermanence. The next heading is thinking about what sort of happiness or suffering you will have in your next rebirth in either of the two types of migrations. I'll just read out one paragraph from here. The contemplation on the suffering of the upper realms will come later in the medium scope. I will now discuss the sufferings of the lower realms. You will surely die, but it is not certain when. After you die, your consciousness does not end. It must definitely take rebirth. There are only two places in which it can take rebirth, the upper and the lower realms. You can assess inferentially to which of these two you will be going. As I have already said, we get divinations and horoscopes made to tell us where we will be reborn next. But these are unnecessary. Buddha has already predicted that we will go to the upper realms if we have been virtuous, and to the lower realms if non-virtuous. From the Jataka tales, be quite certain your rebirth through the next world will be happy or unhappy according to virtuous and non-virtuous karma. Therefore, abandon sin and adopt virtue. We examine the happiness and unhappiness of this life a great deal, calling it thinking about the future. It is nothing of the sort. Be even more far-sighted. Investigate where you will be reborn next. If you do so, you will see that you cannot escape going to either of the upper or the lower realms, and that you are not free to choose which. If we had a choice, we would be in the lower. Thus, where you. His Holiness is right now talking about the three realms, desire, form, and formless realm. And then in the form realm, we have this cross desire, emotion, attachment to things like that. But even in the form realm, there are subtle forms of desire, not gross like that. So that's what His Holiness is talking about. So, I'm going to start reading from the text again. If you have a mixture of karma, some virtuous and some non-virtuous, the stronger will ripen first. If both types are equally strong, the type you are most familiar with will ripen first. If you are equally familiar with both types, then the type produced either earlier will ripen first. Vasubandhu's own commentary to his Treasury of Metaphysics says, in samsara ripening through karma, from their ripening first to last, whatever is heaviest, the nearest, the most familiar, and that done earliest. For us, non-virtuous karma is the stronger of the two. Our thoughts are normally one of attachment and so forth. That being so, all the karma produced from these thoughts is non-virtuous. Even our virtuous actions inadvertently come under the power of non-virtuous thoughts, and very few of these actions are dedicated towards our future lives. The next heading is thinking about the sufferings of the hell. And this has four subheadings: the thinking about the sufferings of sentient beings in the great or hot hells. The hot hells are located as follows. The hell of continual resurrection is 32,000 yojanas under Bodh Gaya in India. The other hot hells are below this hell, with 4,000 yojanas between each of them. All the ground and all the mountains in these hells are composed entirely of red-hot, intense burning iron. the ground like that in the human realms is not at all flat, not at all like the palm of your hand. His Holiness says he will stop right here because he won't finish anywhere. So His Holiness has decided to put a stop here for this year's teaching, and His Holiness says he will continue from here next year. In the Bodhisattva Charya text, this verse is having compassion. He stopped at this particular line, which says, having compassion to sentient beings and refraining from non-virtuous acts. As I said this morning, I feel like reciting the Bodhicitta generation verse because a lot of people have gathered here also from around in the surrounding places, and also a lot of people from the West, Western countries. The Bodhicitta mind, as said in the Shantideva's text, the Buddha who has trained in the Bodhisattva path has for eons, after eons of practice, have felt, come to the conclusion that the Buddhas with conviction think that this only this is the real source of happiness for sentient beings, for this and future in the long run. The greatest part is this mind of helping others, cherishing others. And the essence of that, the essence of that is the Bodhicitta mind. So the perfected state of Bodhicitta is the state of Buddhahood, which has where one has eliminated all delusions and accomplished all knowledge. Just as said in the Shantideva's text, all sentient beings don't want suffering and at the same time are same in wishing to have happiness oneself alone. So if all sentient beings are like that, the Shantideva says, then it doesn't make sense if you just wish. Wish happiness for oneself alone, and also just as he has, just as it is said, all the happiness and good things in the world arise as a result of wishing good and happiness for others, and all the bad and negative things in this world arise as a result of wishing. Happiness and good things for oneself alone. Even the arhats who have just attained liberation alone and not enlightenment, that is also a result of self-cherishing mind. So, if on the other hand we practice self-cherishing mind, not only it will ultimately lead us to enlightenment, even in the short term, in this life, those who have more generous, good-hearted, consider others more important will have a better life, comfortable life. So also if one can think on bodhicitta, the mind becomes courageous. The mind becomes more develops more conviction. If one is like in a state of sadness, sort of a low state of mind, with bodhicitta's practice, the mind sort of regains its strength and becomes more spirited. Like, for example, because that makes you think, I've taken the pledge, I wish, I'm somebody, I aspire to attain enlightenment for all sentient beings. How can I stay like this? And Nagarjuna also said, So Nagarjuna also said these benefits, talked about a huge amount of benefits of bodhicitta. So when you think about these things, you have the arrogance in you, or like sometimes like your mind is too puffed up, then when you think on bodhicitta, the mind sort of regains its sort of balanced state of mind. Sometimes we are very narrow-minded, and as a result of that, we feel desire or hatred like that. But when you try to cultivate an open approach, a very open, liberal approach to perspective, then thy mind automatically becomes wider and more open and liberal. And regarding anger, for example, think of anger. If you think of all sentient beings, would you feel anger? Or would you feel anger to a stranger? So anger is something that arises by taking someone that you know, it has like one individual as the object, like the target of an arrow. Whereas compassion, when you think of compassion, the object doesn't has to be one individual. It's sort of something you can have generate compassion even to a huge amount of people, and also it is something that it doesn't need like somebody like a relative or a friend or a close person close to you as an object to develop compassion. So if we think carefully here, things like minds like compassion and virtuous, other virtuous minds needs doesn't need the self-grasping mind as its support, whereas minds like anger and hatred, they need an immediate companion and backup of the self-grasping mind, the mind grasping inherent nature. So therefore, during the times when our mind is in a low state of or unhappy state, if you meditate on bodhicitta, the mind automatically regains its sort of spirit. Strength. Just like the switch that controls the electricity, if you tune it down, the light becomes dimmer. If it's too dim, you can tune it up, and then the light, the power, the brightness increases. Just like that, the bodhicitta is an amazingly powerful mind. So if we adopt a liberal, open-minded approach, our lives will be happier. So the best offering to the Buddha, the three jewels, and all the Buddhas, is not harming others and approaching us adopting a good-hearted mind. Even those other traditions, accepting creator, theistic tradition, theistic religions, they all practice. They have. So they also have practice of good-heartedness, compassion like that. So, but they use the concept of a theistic God, a God which is omniscient, all-pervasive, and compassionate to all. As the, however, as Buddhist, if you accept a theistic singular, permanent, inherent God, it is against logic. So we accept the Buddhist tradition, accept a non-theistic, a non-theistic Buddhist tradition cannot accept a creator. Either way, so they we use, so both sides use different methods. Both traditions use different methods to develop compassion. So, if one practice good-heartedness, it will not only make others happy, but also help others, but it will also make yourself mentally happy. In today's in the world, how much money has to be spent for health reasons? If you are really concerned about your health, one has to always keep your mind healthy by keeping it. So if you're mentally disturbed, even if you eat a huge amount of medicine, it won't help. So these days, scientists who don't have that much interest in religion, but they are now sort of agreeing that having a good-hearted mind is very important. So even for the short term, a good-hearted approach is important, helpful, and from the Buddhist point of view, a good-heartedness doesn't mean just being sort of indiscriminate, but an intelligent, good-hearted person. So therefore, the Mahayana way of developing good-heartedness based on a huge amount of intellectual logic and reasoning, as explained in such texts like Bodhisattva Acharya, and Ratnavali and Nagarjuna texts, these are that's like the extraordinary. So because the explanations given there, the reasonings and logics presented in those texts sort of totally defeat self-cherishing mind and makes self-cherishing mind, self-grasping mind speechless. And from the deepest of your heart, you want gains the conviction that that's it. You know, this is the ultimate, this is the final truth. So therefore, in most of Nagarjuna's works, he mainly devotes the entire treatise on emptiness. Emptiness and bodhicitta also. In Nagarjuna's commentary to bodhicitta, he says that with the help of emptiness, one can generate an extremely powerful powerful practice of compassion and bodhicitta. So if we do not understand well, see the point why and how suffering can be removed, then one feel like discouraged, demoralized, and one feel like, what's the point? Because suffering will be there anyway. So, but on the other hand, if one sees the point of meaning of emptiness and the possibility of cessation, then one feels gains the conviction and hope that one can remove it. Just like crossing a river, if you know that there's a way to cross a river, by using a boat or ropes or like that, then one will do everything to use those means to cross the river. On the other hand, if one understands that there's no means to do that, then we will just stay there and don't try anything and just have no option but to feel face suffering. So there's a big you can see there's a big difference in knowing the logic and reasonings of Nagarjuna and not knowing in our practice of compassion. So that's why Nagarjuna's the sixth treatise on emptiness and the other important treatises are extremely helpful and important, and they are the fundamental to the practice of compassion and practice of bodhicitta and understanding of emptiness, and even understanding the meaning of the importance of the perfect human basis, the eight, such as eight leshas and 10 endowments like that. These are all a real understanding can happen only on the basis of a good understanding on emptiness. Because emptiness is like the one medicine to all disease. It's the magic. It's like the magic antidote or a magic remedy to everything, all the disease, as well as the magical. It's like the magical path, key to all spiritual realizations, in like compassion, bodhicitta, the six perfections, the tantric practice. Everything is based on emptiness, and emptiness lay out the path for a practitioner. So therefore, bodhicitta can be generated through two means, through exchange of oneself with others and through the seven cause and effect means. Out of the two, the way of generating bodhicitta through practicing the system of exchanging self and others, oneself and others, is more powerful than the other's method. The other system, which is the seven cause and effect means, which starts with realizing all sentient beings as having been one's mother, realizing their kindness, developing the wish to repay their kindness, and so on. So the Lamrim practice emphasizes on adopts an approach to combine the two systems and then practice and train your mind again and again continuously in a gradual stage by stage from year to through continuous for years and slowly one will see the result. It's not easy. So practicing bodhicitta based on emptiness, when a moment comes when one feels a small gains a small amount of experience, that's the time when one takes this pledge to generate aspirational bodhicitta, during which one takes the pledge that one will never let go, give up the practice of bodhicitta. And if one thinks one cannot take such a pledge, then one can just do, when we do the ceremony, one can just let arise aspirational bodhicitta, but no need to take the pledge to not to let it go until enlightenment. So those who are able to take the aspirational bodhicitta pledge, they have to take that and then practice it. And then when one gains certain experience and become quite well developed, then one has to engage in tantric practice. And if one can, bodhicitta is something you have to do. Remind it to yourself three times during the day and three times during the night. So first, imagine where the Buddha is sitting. Imagine a real Buddha is sitting there, surrounded by Buddha Kashyapa. And the Buddha's immediate disciples, surrounded by Bodhisattva disciples like Maitreya, Avalokiteshvara, Manjushri, so on. And then the 17 Arhats of India, the 16 Arhats, and the 80 Mahasiddhas of India. And then also you can visualize great Buddhist masters who have, who have occurred in different Buddhist countries. And as far as Tibet is concerned, imagine the great Buddhist masters of Tibet, of all the four schools, Satyaka, Yuan Nyingma, and Gelug. Imagine, visualize, they're all there in the sky in front of you. So, if possible, we have to recite the complete Samantabhadra puja, but we don't have time. Just we will say the shorter two verse seven limb offering. And then now here we have to not only think of the three jewels, but the Mahayana, Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, because we are taking the Mahayana refuge. So the Mahayana Buddha, Mahayana Sangha, and the Mahayana Dharma. Imagine all of them are here in front of you, looking down on you. In front of them, in order to generate the bodhicitta mind, one has already engaged in sort of their... One has done practice of purification, accumulation, merit, and that we do by offering the seven limbs around, which is offering the whatever slight positive potential I may have created by paying homage, offering, and acknowledging my faults, rejoicing and requesting, recite this seven times, rejoicing and requesting that the Buddha stay and teach. I now dedicate all this for full awakening. Again, whatever slight positive potential I may have created by paying homage, offering, and acknowledging my faults, rejoicing and requesting that the Buddha stay and teach, I now dedicate all this for full awakening. So this is the preliminary for taking refuge, generating bodhicitta by offering the seven limbs. So when you say I prostrate and make offering and confess, one thing, this is like your offering of practice, like through studying Dharma, studying the treatises on the meaning of bodhicitta and emptiness. So And so, like, even your small experience on bodhicitta and understanding on emptiness, these you offer as your offering of practice. And then, as far as confession is concerned, you have from beginningless time and from beginningless lifetimes, out of self-grasping mind and self-cherishing mind, have committed so many negative karmas. Confess all for all of them in front of the object of merit field. And the Buddha himself, who is in front of us, has attained that state of Buddhahood through a state of complete enlightenment. And then the Sangha in front of us, who have practiced, attained this state of path of seeing and above through the practice of bodhicitta and compassion, emptiness. So rejoicing in their accomplishment, and I will also follow them, their example. So, so this is like this offering of the seven limbs. Now the actual generation of bodhicitta, aspiration of bodhicitta, as a so when you say I take refuge in the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. And then next line, when I say until enlightenment, then that is shows the Mahayana refuge, Mahayana Buddha, Mahayana Sangha, and Mahayana Dharma. So this refers to the first line, Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. I take refuge. The purpose of taking refuge in the three jewels is to the resultant Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha that eventually arise in you to hasten that sort of time, so that these will arise in you as soon as possible. So for that reason, you say I go for refuge until I am enlightened. So from the beginning, when I'm an ordinary person, one has to. The second line, or rather, I go for refuge and enlightenment, also means that one has to start practicing such things like bodhicitta and emptiness from the very beginning, even as a beginner. And like by combining vipassana and shamatha, because since emptiness is the real sword or the real antidote to overcome self-grasping mind, on the basis of shamatha and wisdom. So the third line, by the accumulation I create through listening to the Dharma, by the accumulation I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha in order to benefit all sentient beings. So you wish in order to help all sentient beings, may I attain become the Buddha in order to benefit all sentient beings. So if we love ourselves, then what more there is to do than practicing bodhicitta? If we practice bodhicitta, then if we really want to do that, then we have to, because it gives us everything, commitment, conviction, courage, and wisdom, everything. So therefore, just like if we practice bodhicitta, then there's no sense of tiredness or losing hope. So today, as a human, born as a human being, we have met the Dharma, and we have met the Lama. And so after studying, by basing on the treatises, works of Nagarjuna, we are so fortunate. So at this time, this moment when we are fortunate, if I don't practice, engage in bodhicitta practice, then when? When will I do that? So now, with this kind of motivation, make the resolve, and then we will take bodhicitta, aspirational bodhicitta pledge. So those who don't have good legs, you can just keep on sitting. Otherwise, you have to sort of stand, sit up, and so now repeat after me. He's honest, is reciting, I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, and Supreme Assembly. By accumulating the I create through listening to Dhamma, may I become a Buddha in order to benefit all sentient beings. So, just like we have said the first line, first recitation, the second time. So, now the second. So, again, think, just like the bodhicitta mind, and how the beings in the merit field you have visualized in front of you, or the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas past have practiced, I will do that. And now, so in order to attain the state of the three jewels in myself, and so there's the only path to actualize that is to practice, engage the practice of the six perfections. And I will do just like the past Buddhas and Bodhisattvas have done that. The Buddha himself, due to the fact that he has the Buddha nature, practiced, engaged in the six perfections, and then ultimately attained Buddhahood. We also have the Buddha nature. It's already there. No one has to make it new, invent it in us. The Buddha nature is the subtle, luminous mind in us. It is not inherently stained or polluted by defilements. But it's the defilements are only adventitious, and they can be removed through conditioning, through the proper condition. So with this, repeat this second time. So I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, Dharma, and Supreme Assembly. By accumulation through practice and generation, etc., may I become a Buddha in order to benefit all sentient beings. During the third repetition, as I recite the last line, imagine that from this time onwards, excuse me, at this venue of Kanden Monastery, in front of the Buddha Shakyamuni image, the fact that I have today as a seed generated the bodhicitta, aspirational bodhicitta. Now this seed, just like a seed, if given the right kind of care by giving manure or sunlight, water, and then the flower, it will start growing just like that, I will, from now onwards, forever, will not let go my bodhicitta and will continue to practice and make it and repeat third time. So I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha Supreme Assembly. By accumulating generosity in others, may I become a Buddha in order to benefit all sentient beings. So today we haven't finished the lamrim, so we have stopped the lamrim for here, and then at the end, as an auspicious act, we have generated bodhicitta. So you, me, regarding myself, from the moment I open my eyes in the morning, I immediately think of bodhicitta, and at the end of the day, in the night before going to sleep, I think on bodhicitta. It really helps me. Just like Tsongkhapa said, if you practice bodhicitta, through which you intend to help others, but actually ends up you make yourself happy. Because I have a lot of friends and a lot of people give me gifts, so it's a benefit to me. If you think of yourself alone and bully others, then nobody probably I will not receive presents. So this altruistic mind, the wish to help others, the mind to help others, it's like a mental gem. Like just like Bodhisattva Acharya said in the Bodhisattva Acharya, which is this, it is the ambrosia, the best ambrosia or nectar to cure all human worldly diseases. For example, take myself. For example, I'm under the control of the afflictive emotions. We have a lot of suffering. Like Tsongkhapa has said, that we are in the grip of the iron claws of the self-grasping mind, the ignorance of self-inherent self-grasping mind. This verse from Bodhisattva Acharya says, it is the supreme elixir that overcomes the lot of death. It is the inexhaustible treasure that eliminates all poverty in the world. So, liberation or crossings, liberation, or the other term, crossing the ocean of suffering. So His Holiness is reading this verse, these words. It is also the supreme medicine that cures the world's diseases. It is the evergreen tree that shelters all beings wandering tired on the roads of life. It is the universal bridge that frees beings from wretched lives. It is the rising moon of the mind that dispels the torment of addictions. It is the great sun that burns away the mighty ignorance of the world. It is the quintessential butter from the churning of the milk of Dharma. It's really true, His Honor says. If we think carefully, not only it's not just think, but also try as much as possible to practice. So these benefits will actually become real, and one will be able to experience them. I'm not saying I'm a bodhisattva. I'm not saying I have realized emptiness. The reason I'm saying this, what I'm saying is, if you try, one can see that there's real something is happening, because for you students, you have even more time than me. to study and practice. So you know better than me. If you practice, put effort, then from the very seat where you are sitting, you will be able to experience that. Oh, I see. This is the meaning of the word, that the sentence, that tyata gade gade para gade para samgade. And that is the. This is how the levels of the path, graduated path, goes, and why this is possible. And if, then you will see the gain conviction to practice Dharma. So we will stop here this year's Lamrim teaching. And now I have to, this evening I have to go to Depung. Tomorrow, Depung Lachi has requested me to do Kali Devi initiation, Jenang. I also would like to do that. So this is something. This is something like you shouldn't sort of attend with hype. It's not really. It may not be relevant for the entire public. What is really relevant to the entire public is what we already went through the Lamrim teaching here in Ganden. Over there in Depung, there's not much big space, so not everybody need to come. But I want a sort of a small group of people who are really determined and prepared and serious. So those, for the rest, from today onwards, take holiday. You can call it a day. And practice what you have to carry with you is your practice of bodhicitta, such as until enlightenment. I take refuge, and may I attain enlightenment. May all my good practices, such as generosity, may become a cause to attain enlightenment for sentient beings, like that. And His Holiness is now reciting those verses from Nagarjuna and Atisha and like that on emptiness. So these things you should think on their meaning on daily basis. And now those of you who are now dispersing hereafter and going back to your different destinations, go back comfortably and happily. And next year when we will confirm the date, and then we will make announcement. And if you can come, you can come. Even if you cannot come, it's still all right. Jambibar.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. kiyame, anda di jiksam nanda. Di anda yizan kongi, anda talalama tras, anda kesa sawa. Di kyanzu, ngudu kundas chigudu, di kyechia, nga kiyame da, duksina.
Yeah.